It is time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage for Robinhood Radio and exclusive to Robinhood Radio. David is a multimedia and international journalist with his own online column at themediabeat.us. And as a special correspondent since 2012, he has contributed TV reports to the PBS network, mostly on ethical issues. Here's David.
This is David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat for the weekend beginning June 28, 2024. The candidates' TV debate, much ballyhooed in advance, has come and gone. Are we any better off? You don't really have to answer that. Is either candidate any better off? Well, the media, in all their sagacity and insight, will be arguing about that for days ahead, maybe even weeks. And what comes next? The big calendar points for the media are, first, in just 2 weeks' time, the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and then something of a sizable gap of nearly 2 months before the Democrats' convention in Chicago. Chicago happens to have been the nation's most popular political convention city ever since some such events began in the middle of the 19th century. It has hosted 25 of them, 14 Republican and 11 Democratic. The last one being the Democrats in 1996 when they renominated Bill Clinton and Al Gore. And in reviewing Chicago as a venue, we can't ever forget the historically chaotic Democratic Convention of 1968, a political low point among all the turbulence of the Vietnam War years. Chicago, August 2024, is already top of mind in the media. It certainly is in the Rupert Murdoch universe. It's perfectly obvious which side in the presidential contest the Murdoch empire is supporting. It's most obvious in cable TV with Fox News, which is making no pretense any longer at being, quote, fair and balanced, which was once, rather incredibly, the channel's motto, until they dropped it 7 years ago. It was dropped in favor of a new claim, part of which also stretches credulity, of course. The change was to then start saying about themselves that they are, quote, most watched, most trusted. Other Murdoch outlets, like the Wall Street Journal, tend to be a bit more subtle in their support for the Republican side. This week, for instance, faithfully reporting how the grand old party will be treating its opposing party when it gathers in Chicago. The paper's headline? GOP plan for Democratic convention, bash Chicago as a mess. The story below that headline emphasizes how the city, run as it is by Democrats in the mayor's office and in the city council, will be a useful target for Republican attacks, especially during the week when the nation's Democrats meet in the city's convention arena. It quotes Republican consultant Alex Conant, whose record has included working for George W. Bush and Senator Mark Rubio. He told the Journal, Chicago's problems will become part of the Democratic convention. The paper itself addresses those problems this way. It cites in its opening attention-grabbing sentence a Chicago building manager, a certain Colleen Seller, and I'll quote the paper exactly here. She, quote, keeps an eye out for human excrement outside her building, less than a mile from the United Center Arena, where President Biden will be nominated at this summer's Democratic National Convention. Did I say the Wall Street Journal is subtle? Maybe I should reconsider that judgment. The article goes on to give us a map showing how close the arena is to a migrant shelter, and points out that Chicago has declared itself ever since 1995 to be a sanctuary city for immigrants. It also points to the city's high rate of property crimes, though it admits murders are down from previous high rates, and what it paints as a rash of shuttered businesses in the city center, and a sizable office vacancy rate of 23%. Adding to that, it predicts that an expected 100,000 pro-Palestinian demonstrators protesting about the Gaza war will bring, quote, chaos in the streets that will in turn add strength to what it describes as the Republicans' core message of law and order. This so-called reporting by the Journal was called out by Jeff Jarvis, that veteran media critic at CUNY, the City University of New York. He described it as simply, quote, doing the GOP's bidding. I can't help but agree. City bashing, though, is something of a Republican pastime. Trump himself, when not joining in the denigration of Chicago, maybe overstepped the mark for his own side when he condemned Milwaukee as a horrible city. Milwaukee happens, as I mentioned earlier, to be where the Republicans are holding their convention very soon. Trump's campaign spokesperson, Stephen Cheung, used social media to attempt a walk back for the Trump criticism, suggesting it didn't quite mean what it sounded like. But it's pretty clear what he said from, among others, Punchbowl News, the feisty site that concentrates on congressional stories. Punchbowl is the Secret Service codename for Capitol Hill. Punchbowl quoted sources who were inside the closed meeting of lawmakers where Trump vented his feelings. Along with other attendees talking to other outlets like CNN, Punchbowl's informants heard him say, "Milwaukee, where we are having our convention, is a horrible city." There is not much wiggle room in that sentence. But why in the first place is the convention happening in largely Democratic Milwaukee? Reince Priebus, Trump's own former chief of staff, agreed to the location back in 2022, making Common Cause, which was praised at the time as bipartisan, with Milwaukee's mayor, the Democrat Cavalier Johnson. What a great name. He seems, by the way, far from cavalier or casual and reckless in his character. He's maybe instead what we Scots call canny. He certainly voiced a canny motive for inviting the opposite side to his city. A little curiously, in a curiosity of history at least, Milwaukee had been slotted to host the Democrats in the previous electoral season, 2020. But as you might remember, that was totally upended by COVID, and it became largely a virtual convention. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris were in Delaware while being nominated in Milwaukee. According to the Associated Press, Cavalier Johnson's stated reason for wanting the Republicans to gather there this year, expressed out loud to his Republican opposite number in the deal, Priebus, was, quote, "I want you Republicans to take all your money to Milwaukee. Spend it in that one week and leave it in Milwaukee." He might have been partly joking, but that has a truthful as well as a canny ring. The fact remains that Trump doesn't like Milwaukee, Wisconsin, despite all his media team's efforts to minimize the trashing. I wonder if anyone in that team has told him that it was the person who won in Wisconsin who became president in all of the last four presidential elections. Meanwhile, an entire world away, 6,500 miles away, the viciously fought civil war in Sudan has passed its one-year mark, and it has cost the lives of about 16,000 men, women, and children, as well as forcing more than a third of the country's entire population, approximately 12 million people, to abandon their homes and flee. This war, however, remains a lower priority for the world's media than the Gaza war and Russia's ongoing attack upon Ukraine. It should lie heavily on the world's conscience, but a report published this week from the International Rescue Committee highlights the lack of attention paid to the crisis and the world's failure to address the ever-worsening humanitarian disaster. The war, like many, has brought with it the almost inevitable concomitant of famine. The IRC is predicting that 250,000 children will die of starvation in the coming months. I know the IRC and its dedicated efforts very well, from having worked with them further south and west in Africa, covering the two Congos, the smaller Republic of Congo, and across their shared broad river, the much bigger Democratic Republic of Congo, so-called. Refugees in colossal numbers are a fact of life there, and of course in any country where the IRC works. The committee's country director for Sudan is a Sudanese national, Etizan Yusuf, who has been appearing in Western media this week to try and raise consciousness of the crisis. Massive, you might say macrocosmic catastrophes like Sudan, can defy our full understanding purely by being sometimes so huge. Journalism, good journalism, often involves finding the telling human microcosm that might spark a sharper appreciation in us, the distant audience. I was struck this week by a tiny detail concerning Miss Yusuf herself. Wherever she goes, spreading the broad, hard-to-bear truth, she carries a small key tucked into her laptop bag. It's the key to her home in her country's capital, Khartoum. But that home itself? It's now, in all likelihood, a flattened building, one of hundreds of thousands destroyed amid the countless ground attacks and airstrikes of the conflict. The key is probably useless now, Miss Yusuf thinks, but, quote, "I can't really get rid of it," she told Leila Fadel of NPR. She also said, "What is needed is a determined global effort to put pressure on the two warring sides and a renewed push to get badly needed aid to the country." During that same radio interview, though, she acknowledged a blunt fact. Quote, "I guess we don't have a lot of influence." That's all from the Media Beat this week. If you have been, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.us.